and welcome to the Go Home Show podcast, brought to you by Sporf, your one-stop shop for all things professional wrestling, with weekly chats with WWE superstars, all the news you might have missed from previous 7 days, and a look back at some of the most infamous moments in wrestling history. My name's Will Brazier. Of course, I couldn't do it on my own. First up is a man that was in the bloody Thunderdome, Chris Anderson. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I enjoyed my time in the crowd at SummerSlam. It was an experience.
Yeah, we'll get into that later on. And a man that tried to get in the Thunderdome but was denied because he's too negative about professional wrestling, Michael Henson, how are you?
I mean, that's, again, factually incorrect. Hopefully one day you'll be able to get an intro right, because I was in the Thunderdome and was on the camera side as well.
You write the intros, I just read them. And next up, it's Elliot Ames. E-Dog couldn't get in the Thunderdome. Not for any weird reasons, was it?
No, it was just because it was a bit too late for me, really. Yeah. I got the email and everything, but I let the other boys take over in my place.
Exactly, yeah. Some weird stuff going on there, but it wasn't us, I promise. We always start off with five things you've missed. And as of recording this, I woke up, I thought I was in a dream. I thought my eyes were a bit blurry. Cross, not champion anymore. And then we've got a 60-minute Iron Man match next Tuesday, which is not a Wednesday. Gents, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, I think this is kind of classic NXTs, that when they get thrown a curveball, they're very, very good at just keeping it simple and putting on the best possible match they can do to essentially reset the division. Like, we've seen it before with, obviously, like, Gargano and Ciampa. They're deep in this, like, this almost, like, era-defining feud. Ciampa gets injured, and they find ways to keep everything going just by putting on the best possible matches. So it was a very NXT typical move to think, right, let's find our four best wrestlers, stick them in a match, give them an hour, and from there we will have something.
Yeah, it's a sensible approach, isn't it, E-Dog? But you've got to feel sorry for Karrion Kross. One day, well, a few days as champion, from Saturday to Wednesday, and now it's gone. Do you think when he comes back, he'll be back on top of the mountain?
I'm hoping so. I mean, it's one of them, because the one I always think of was when Finn Balor won the Universal title. And for as great as he had been when he did return, he'd never really been given that push we were kind of expecting. I'd like to think that they were planning something quite big with Karrion Kross moving forward. They wouldn't give him the belt, you know, in such a quite a short turnaround time from him getting his notoriety. That to me hopefully suggests that when he does come back, he'll hopefully get the title back and they'll be able to follow those plans through going forward. But yeah, it's disappointing, but it's the Mount Rushmore of NXT, and I'm really excited for it. It's going to be a fantastic match regardless of all the negativity surrounding it.
Crush, 60 minutes with Cole, Ciampa, Gargano and Balor. Surely even you couldn't pick holes in this.
No, yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. Obviously, it's Tuesday because of the NHL playoffs, I believe. So it'll be interesting to see how it is, because we're going to have Sunday Payback, Monday Raw, Tuesday NXT. So should be lined up for a few good days heading into next week.
On a personal level, if they could do NXT on a Tuesday, it would actually be really good for this podcast going forward. So maybe if anyone... Chris, have you got any ins to William Regal being on the British wrestling scene?
Unfortunately not. I think I'm a bit above his level, so I don't really try to...
Wow.
Clip it, send it, tag him in it.
Watch that be the moment that my WWE tryout gets completely nixed.
No, we'll get you there. We'll be like the NFL men around the ring, but not as intimidating for big old Pat. I mean, if me, Crush and Elliot were surrounded with the ring, would you feel backed up necessarily?
I would very much enjoy doing the dive off the top rope onto all four of you.
Yeah, and that's why you're not a heel, but you're still playing him. Next up, Keith Lee, a man that lost his title on Saturday, debuted on Raw on Monday, had some dodgy music, some new dodgy gear. It's not all bad, because he's on Raw and he's facing Randy Orton at Payback, Crush. Exciting times for Keith Lee.
Yeah, very exciting times for Keith Lee. I know also there's like this big sort of conversation around his entrance and ring gear at the moment, but he tweeted about his entrance music saying he's got no control of it. So I was reading about it yesterday or Tuesday, I can't remember which one it was. And it's because the people who did it, is it like CFOS? It's CFO and then the dollar sign.
Oh, the ones they do, the modern ones, haven't they?
They've left WWE, but then have split up as a duo.
Ah.
So I think it's something to do with that and the sort of monetization agreement that they have. Wow. So, yeah, I think there'll be a lot of new themes coming soon. I think some have already been rejected by Stars. But yeah, Keith Lee's the first one to change. And I'm a really big fan of his old one, so it's a shame to see.
Next, we are on to Roman Reigns. He made his triumphant return at the end of SummerSlam, spearing the shit out of The Fiend, who just had a great bloody moment. And Roman Reigns is back, and he's wreaking havoc, Elliot.
Yeah, and going into the show, there was the whole kind of tagline people were saying, like, you'll never expect what's coming, or all that sort of stuff. I was not expecting Roman Reigns to come back. I wasn't expecting him to come back anytime this year. Maybe they'd save him for the Rumble or even Mania next year. And the fact that he's just inserted himself into it, into the title picture. Normally, I'd be quite annoyed at that. I tend to like feuds kind of fizzle out and then someone reclaims it. But Roman never lost the belt. He was meant to face Goldberg at Mania. He looks fucking sick. You know, he's got his new teeth, his new gnashes. The big dog's back, and the fact that he looks like he's actually going to be getting this heel push, which is something that a lot of us have wanted for a long time. I mean, I've fallen for it many times. I remember that night after Mania when he beat Taker, no offense, Crush, and he gave that scathing promo where he just said nothing and got booed for 20 minutes. I thought, this is it, this is the moment. And then we just went back to being boring. But it means he's going to be facing Braun again, which came out of that feud after The Undertaker. Those matches were great. I've seen him do some great work with Bray as well in the past. This is exciting. This is like almost a changing of momentum for SmackDown at the moment, in my opinion.
Chris, I just wanted to come to you because it was sort of wrapping up our SummerSlam weekend sort of recap. But you were in the Thunderdome. I mean, what was it like? Have you got any insight just being... Were you sat in your pants?
So this was, I wasn't sat in my pants. I did have, there was a good moment when the Street Profits came on and there's like a director in your ear telling you like, oh, let's start cheering or boo for Randy or whatever. And Street Profits came out and he said, if you've got red cups, put them in the air, show us your red cups. And I was sat there with my four pack of Carling wilding out, having a great time. Still no clue how I didn't make it onto TV. But what I did find dead interesting is after the main event, after The Fiend had just beaten Braun, the director or whatever you want to call him was telling people to cheer for The Fiend, which I found quite interesting because you don't really see The Fiend as a face. I don't think he's a heel as such. He's just another one of those kind of weird tweener monsters that you're not quite sure how to react to him. And so they were actively pushing people to cheer for The Fiend, and then, which then means when Roman comes in, it is almost like a full heel attack taking on the big baby face of the company. So I found that very, very interesting. Now, again, as Elliot was saying, we've seen heel Roman before, and it usually lasts half an hour before someone has a change of heart. So whether or not they stick with this, we'll have to wait and see. I think it'll be very interesting to see if they are going all in on it. If they are going in on heel Roman Reigns, I expect to see Roman Reigns win the belt this week because they know that that will infuriate the entire wrestling world, and that it'll be the quickest way to get him heat because it is the... We're pushing him no matter what you think. So here you go. And they'll just allow him to be booed forever.
Look at that. You come to him for a question about the Thunderdome and then he drops the bomb that The Fiend will be dropping the title. Very similar to Christian, who was watching against Randy Orton in that infamous rivalry that they had. So stick around for that. Make sure you tweet Chris if he gets it right or wrong.
Got one right last week. I said Keith Lee was leaving NXT.
Yeah, but come on.
There's still time. I'm still not convinced that we won't see Undisputed Era implode on Tuesday.
Not a bad shot, because it feels like it's murmuring in the background, doesn't it? Speaking of NXT, Crush, I'll come to you. I've got some bad news. I think it's actually great news. Wade Barrett is on commentary for NXT last night. Have you got any insight for us there?
I've got some bad news because that was his catchphrase, but obviously you don't remember his great Hammer Time. I'm afraid.
I just said his catchphrase.
I know, but then you said it's good news. Just play along, Will. Play along. Like when you said
it. What do you mean? I know it's bad news. But it's good news he's back.
Do you smell what The Rock is cooking?
It's bad news is his catchphrase, and it's good news that he's back.
Didn't Rock buy the
EFL? Oh, my God.
So obviously he's not appeared for 4 years now since he left the company back in 2016. But he came back as a special guest commentator last night. But it looks to be a one-off deal rather than a full-time deal. But it's good to see him again. Obviously, he's been doing a lot of stuff for another company. Chris, can you run the company? I can't remember the company.
So he was working for NWA as color commentator there. So. And obviously back in the day, he was also with WCPW and Defiant as well. That was a while ago. And World of Sport as well. One World of Sport was on ITV. He was there.
He came back last night. It'd be great to see him back permanently. I think he's great at what he does. We've used a video from our friends at Inside the Ropes on Facebook on the story of Brock Lesnar, and the way he talks and tells stories just like next level. Go and check that out as well. Sporth on Facebook to see that story.
He was also in a film with Dapper Laughs, which I'm sure was a real highlight for him during his time away from WWE. Moving on, finally, one of the last things that you might have missed at home is Brody Lee is the new AEW TNT champion, defeating Cody Rhodes, or just Cody, I don't want to get sued by anyone. Chris, good move?
Yeah, I think so. I think for those who may not be aware who Brody Lee is, he was formerly Luke Harper when he was in WWE with the Wyatt family. It was a move that was always coming with the rumours that Cody's going to be working on Stephen Amell's new show. So he'll be taking extended time off anyway. I think the way that they did it, I think they essentially a very one-sided squash match for Brody Lee to take the title really puts him over. So I think it's a good move. If you've not checked out AEW and the stuff that Brody Lee's doing, it's very, very good. He's also been on the Being the Elite show with the Young Bucks and that kind of thing. He's very, very good. He's very, very talented. I think it was kind of widely understood that he was perhaps underutilized or undervalued by the WWE. So I think to see him getting a good push within AEW is something I'm very excited to see personally.
Right, we are moving on to our next feature, and it is Convince Me. We've talked a lot about the Thunderdome, but that's got our appetite to get fans back in the stadium. We want it more than ever, but it got us chatting in our WhatsApp group. What is the loudest ever reaction, the biggest ever pop we have seen, witnessed, or as I'm sure Crush will tell us that he was there for? Let's start with Crush, because I think we all know as a panel where he's going. We may have slightly mentioned it on the show before, but Chris, for you, what is the loudest reaction in the history of wrestling?
You've already introed it for me. Being back in 2017 at WrestleMania 33, there's only one place to go. It's the loudest thing I've ever heard. I went absolutely mental myself, and it is the Hardy Boys returning to WWE after a long, long time away. I'd seen them on the Friday night at the Super Show, where it was a mental show. They had like an 8-man tag match with Team Ospreay against Team Ricochet. It was like Drew McIntyre and Ospreay on the same team. It's the mentalest thing ever. They had like a battle royale. The Sandman came. He was like smoking inside a hotel, which apparently got him loads of fines. And then it was Pentagon and Phoenix against the Hardy Boys. And I got a selfie with Jeff at the end of the match. And then on the Sunday,
sorry, Crush. This isn't my week at WrestleMania 33. What is the loudest pop you've heard?
I'm just getting into it. And then, on the Sunday,
it was a hot dog with a large Slurpee.
No, it was actually it was a pretzel and a large drink.
Of course it was.
But the Hardy Boys coming back for the Fatal 4-Way Tag Match, Ladder Match, which they went on to win the Raw Tag Team titles. Yeah, that is my choice.
You knew it was going to happen, but then there was almost a bit of me that was like, oh, it can't happen.
Yeah, so obviously, having seen them on the Friday, then they performed on the Saturday for another company. And then on the Sunday, everyone still thought they were doing it, but there was no like sightings or anything. And obviously, the New Day come out and they say it's a Fatal 4-Way. And then they start doing like the slow stroke. Kofi takes his hat off. And then the music hits. Everyone goes mad. Big E pops out. Like, he's going absolutely crazy for Jeff Hardy. I think Kofi's doing the Jeff Hardy, the finger dance thing that he does. Yeah.
Well, it's a good start, and he was there for it. We get that on a T-shirt. That can be your catchphrase going forward, actually. I was there for it. We'll move on to Elliot now. I can't imagine you were in America for the 1st of April 1999, but that doesn't matter. Elliot, what are you going for?
I'm going for the pop heard round the world, which was when Stone Cold Steve Austin returned to save Mankind to help him beat The Rock to win his first ever WWE Championship. Simply put, this is not only the biggest pop ever, it's arguably the most important moment in WWE's history, purely because this match was pre-recorded. Raws weren't always live back at the time, so Eric Bischoff, head of WCW at the time, had the incredible foresight to tell Tony Schiavone to spoil the main event of Raw that night. You know what ended up happening? 600,000 WCW fans switched channels and watched Raw and saw not only Mankind win the belt, but the pop when Stone Cold Steve Austin returned after being away for months. It's absolutely unbelievable. It's the Cinderella story. It encapsulates the Attitude Era at its finest. You got the corporation in the Rock's corner. You got D-Generation X also helping out Mankind. Every single person in and around the ring is an absolute superstar. It's arguably the peak of wrestling on regular television. It's easily the biggest pop of all time. And it also has the most impact out of any of our suggestions that we're putting forward. So that's why I choose it.
I like it. It's one of them ones that I can show my mates that don't like wrestling and you can go watch. It's like, you know, when you see a nine darter at the darts and there's just beer going everywhere. Like when Stone Cold comes back, it's like a Van Gerwen nine dart. Niche reference, but we'll crack on. Chris, what are you going for?
So I'm going to, on a similar vein to what Elliot said there, I'm going to go with the actual best Cinderella story of all time. And that is Daniel Bryan winning the WWE World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania 30. Now, we talk about how wrestling struggles to make it into mainstream culture, especially in modern times, which is a completely fair point. And Stone Cold, you know, is arguably the biggest star to come out of wrestling within wrestling, i.e. The Rock is the biggest star in the world of pop culture, but Stone Cold is probably the biggest star within wrestling. However, the yes symbol is something that transcended every part of modern pop culture. Like, it is everywhere. You can watch the NBA, the NFL, NHL. You've probably seen it in the Premier League. It's everywhere. And this was the culmination of that entire series, and it created the blueprint for how WWE builds up main event babyfaces today. And for that, I'll give you the reference of Kofi Mania. Exactly the same kind of idea, in that corporation doesn't believe in insert babyface X, and they build themselves up and they have to fight through barrier and barrier and barrier to create themselves into the star, and then they win the belt at the biggest show of the year. This moment when Daniel Bryan tapped out Batista essentially changed the world of WWE forever. You want to talk about legacies within WWE? This is it. And then not just that, not just the idea that wrestling structure was changed forever, but also this was arguably one of the biggest financial wins for WWE ever as well. They drew nearly $11 million just in tickets for this one match because everyone knew it was coming. You want to talk about a moment that changed wrestling, the moment that brought WWE back into mainstream light, this was it. And that's why it is the biggest pop in wrestling history.
Now, I am going to go with CM Punk in his home turf. Because I think what you're all missing there, gents, just going back through it, is there's a pop. There's a general loud pop that we're all aware of, like the nine darters, and that's the pop. However, there's a little cherry pop that you get on top when it's your hometown and everything that leading up to that moment. The fans in Chicago that night, Money in the Bank I'm talking about, John Cena versus CM Punk, I think, until it happened, didn't think CM Punk was going to win. So that moment when that three count finally goes down and he's got the belt and he's sat on that barrier next to that clown, an actual clown, and that guy who's got braces on who's looking shocked, like, what the hell? And he's about to take it. I even still think then, until he actually, I think that's why he had to leave the arena, because until he was out of the arena with no referee near him, people thought he was going to get screwed over. And that pop at the three is like a, fuck it out. And then it's like, astronomical. Roof goes off. Even the one for the entrance, when he finally comes out, because it's been building all night. That night as well, we were talking about it off air, Christian, Randy Orton, they were going off for them. I think they were happy that Christian had won. So it was that Chicago crowd that only they can build in. CM Punk walks out as WWE champion after the pipe bomb. That's what I'm going for. But who do you think, out of all of us, has put the best argument forward? Get in touch with us on Twitter. If you're watching on YouTube, get involved in the comments down below. Is it the Hardy Boys? Is it Stone Cold saving Mankind? Is it Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30? Or CM Punk at Money in the Bank?
Payback may be just a matter of days away, but we'll be spoilt with live action in the coming weeks as the Thunderdome comes live from the Amway Center in Orlando. And how best to enjoy watching along them with the company of some fresh and delicious beer from all over the globe. In this crazy English weather, there's no need to worry about heading to the shops to stock up. Beer 52 will bring the beer to you. They are offering a free case of 8 beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/thegohomeshow and cover $5.95 for postage. Each case is delivered direct to your doorstep, so no need to leave the house. If you're looking to stock up, now is your chance. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club with over 150,000 members that they send a brand new case to every month. Each month's case has a different theme. Past themes have included beer from New Zealand, from South Africa, from Korea, and from all over the US and Europe. So that is beer52.com. That's the word beer, then the numbers 52.com/thegohomeshow for free beers.
Right, now it is time for room 101. And this week, I am trying to get something in that dirty little room. And I'm against Elliot. I'm going to have to convince him that my subject is worth going in room 101. And I'm going to maybe alienate the audience that we have built up so far on this podcast. But, you know, you got to keep it fresh. You got to keep on top of things. So this week, guys, I'd like to put in room 101 smart fans. Now, I'd say we're smart fans, but we're not the sort of smart fan that I'm talking about. The sort of smart fan that would get on Twitter at, you know, 1 minute past the spoiler date, get it on there, or even before the show, just ruin a magic moment. That a Royal Rumble is a perfect example. I think the last Royal Rumble that wasn't spoiled for me was when I literally cacked my pants when Chris Jericho came back in that one where Dolph Ziggler was still. I was at uni, running around the house, naked. Maybe I slid out my pants. I can't remember. What an image as we go forward. But people that feel it's necessary, I don't mind. Journalists and reporters have got a place, obviously. They get their information, they put it out there. But Ian from Scunthorpe, who's got a mate from a mate who knows a mate that says Roman Reigns is coming back on Sunday, I don't want to know that. Keep it together. Just keep it to yourself. Maybe put it in your WhatsApp group. But I don't want to know that because it's like EastEnders, the Who's done it over the years. Phil Mitchell, when he got shot, I don't know about you, but I didn't know he'd done it. And now I don't want anything else to be spoiled. So that's why the worst of the worst smart fans need to get in room 101, stay there, and keep the mouth shut.
Elliot, it's over to you.
Well, although some of the reasons Will gives make a lot of sense, I think getting rid of smart fans in general isn't really worth doing. And even if you're going for the worst of the worst, purely because these are people who absolutely adore and absolutely are obsessed with wrestling. They love it from all its angles, whether it's looking at the backstage politics to the actual stuff we see on screen in front of us. For me personally, for as bad as most of these people are, if I don't want to see any of this sort of stuff, I just mute words on Twitter and don't follow certain accounts. So I don't think it's that difficult. It was easy for me to not be spoiled for Game of Thrones, for example, once I did that. So I don't really understand the reason why people should struggle in the modern age where everything is 24/7 and everything is the internet, where you can say, oh, stuff's going to be spoiled. I don't think it's that bad. The thing that always excites me, though, is when you see people giving, similar to shows like Game of Thrones with WWE, is their fan theories, their speculation, their fantasy booking, their dream matches.
And Anderson actually, Angle.
Actually doing stuff that's different than WWE are doing. And sometimes stuff ends up going over because of ideas that people want to see. I mean, one of my favorite ones over the past few years, particularly after Drew McIntyre won the WWE title, is I want to see my boy Heath Slater win the WWE Championship by beating Jinder Mahal and Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania. I want to see that. That is a dumb, smart fan theory that probably isn't going to happen because we can't have nice things and it's 2020. But I like hearing that sort of stuff. I like seeing silly stuff come out. Again, with the actual show spoilers, you know, the stuff's going to be on YouTube like minutes after it's been in the show anyway, if you're watching Raw or SmackDown or NXT. So I just say you got to change the way you browse the internet. Make sure you're not following certain accounts, mute certain words, don't go on certain pages, and just try to get yourself offline and then watch it and enjoy it and be sucked into it. So I have to disagree with you, Will.
Yeah, I did like you before Edit. It just sounds like I need a digital detox, to be honest with you, Crush. Just, you know, get myself away, get my head out my own arse, and just maybe, you know, embrace the fact that I might just heel turn on my own point and just start revealing spoilers from sources that I've found and just ruin it for you three.
Obviously, Chris is banned after losing last week, so yeah. I am in charge of...
Oh, are you? I didn't know that. I know which way this is going.
And yeah, your point is very weak compared to Elliot's, so Elliot wins. It's not going in room 101, and you are banned from next week's room 101, and it'll be me versus Chris with Elliot as the judge. Do you agree with Will that smart fans should be put in room 101, or do you agree with Elliot? Some. And also, don't forget to tweet us at GoHomeShowPod.
I also want to dive in and point out the fact that we have Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler taking on Bayley and Sasha Banks for the tag team titles at Payback is 100% and specifically Will Brazier's fault.
I think a match that we all wanted. Didn't know we wanted, but now we've got it, we're like, yes, yes.
And now it is time for the quiz, and the team, as per every week, will go head-to-head in a quick quiz format based around a specific topic. For example, the topic could be hardcore champions. They say how many can name, and they bid for a shot at naming them. So, for example, Chris might start with 5, Will might go 6, Elliot might go 7, and then it was like, I can't beat that. So then Chris goes and tries to name 7 to try and win the day. This week, the topic is, I'm going to give you 15 seconds to try and name them. NXT champions, going off the fact that Karrion Kross has had to vacate it. So can you name any of the 20 champions so far? Obviously started back in 2012, the first NXT championship was won, and then right up to present day. So you've all got one at least, because we've already spoke about it. So I'm going to start with Mr. Chris Anderson.
I will go with 7.
Elliot?
Let's go with 8. That's
Will.
Elliot, was that not convincing with that 8? Oh, I will go for 9.
Cool. Back over to you, Chris.
But there is zero chance that Will Brazier can name 9 NXT champions in 60 seconds. Zero chance.
Can you go higher than 9?
No, I can't go higher than 9.
Right, okay then. So there has been 9 champions throughout the years.
There's been 20 champions.
Yeah, sorry, I'm getting confused. I was trying to get my stopwatch up. Will said he could name 9 of them. You got 60 seconds. Go.
Karrion Kross, Gargano, Ciampa, Big E Langston, Seth Rollins. Now I'm struggling. Adam Cole, Drew McIntyre, Bobby Roode.
Oh,
one more to go. And you've got 43 seconds.
Andre Cien Almas.
There we go. He's done it. 9.
Very good. I am very impressed.
And that was in 25 seconds.
How many more can you get out, Will? You were on a roll there.
I sort of was going from start to finish, and then I can't remember any sort of the middle ones.
You didn't get even say Keith Lee, did you?
Keith Lee, yeah. God.
So we'll start from the top. Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
Bo Dallas. McGee. Neville. Sami Zayn. Kevin Owens. Finn Balor. Samoa Joe. Shinsuke Nakamura, Samoa Joe again, Shinsuke Nakamura again, Bobby Roode, Drew McIntyre, Andrade Cien Almas, Aleister Black, Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano, Adam Cole, Keith Lee, Karrion Kross, and the next one will be one of Finn Balor, Tommaso Ciampa, Adam Cole, and Johnny Gargano for their second reign.
I actually think, so that's not actually 20 different names. So I've named 9, that was 20 champions. I've read probably 9 of 15, so just saying how fucking special I am.
That list actually isn't as hard, because as soon as you said it, I was like, that's tricky. But actually, you forget how young NXT is. Mm-hmm. Like the list of names there, most of them are stalwart WWE guys. That would be like, yeah, I could... blah, 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 blah. So, no, fair play to Will. That was a good effort.
Thanks, Chris. Cheers, guys. Do I set the quiz for next week, then?
Yeah, you're in charge of the quiz next week.
Am I the only person to not win a quiz so far?
Yes.
You are the only wrestler on the show as well.
And I'm the inaugural quiz champion.
Yeah, the Chris Jericho.
I'm the Daniel Bryan in this. I'm the babyface that's going to fight through adversity of being a B-plus player to win.
Yeah, but the system doesn't want you down.
So, it is time for our weekly interview with a WWE superstar. This week's interviewee has gone through more bumps in the road than most superstars ever encounter, and she's just 25 years old. However, her talent clearly makes her indispensable to the WWE, and she most recently appeared on SmackDown as part of the women's number one contender Battle Royale before SummerSlam. This week, joining our very own crusher is Wales's finest, Miss Tegan Knox Crush, over to you.
We're delighted to be joined by NXT superstar Tegan Knox.
Hey guys, thank you for having me. I'm excited for this.
Start with heading back to 2017. You obviously signed with WWE and then you got your injury at the performance center, the first knee injury. Can you talk us through that moment when it happened, please?
So I was just in training. At the time, me and Dakota were just doing one of the drills, and actually Matt Bloom was taking the class that day because Robbie Brookside, I believe, was in the UK. And we were just running a normal drill, a drill we'd done, you know, before we even met each other, we knew this drill coming in. So I've done it so many times, and it just happened when my right foot stayed planted, but my body wanted to go the other way. And I just felt the pops, and I just hit the mat, and Coach Bloom came running over, accidentally pushed this guy out of the ring. But he was just there, and you could see he was devastated because the pops were loud in the knee. So like everyone in the class, you heard the pops. Him with his mitt hand was like trying to hold my hand, but it was just like, I've mitt just clasping on. But I think it was less, maybe this, that knee was less than a week and I was in for surgery. I had the MRI the next day, and then we just had to wait until the Friday because the surgeon that WWE used worked Fridays, and he is one of the best. I think he's one of the top three for ACL surgeons in the US. They got me in with him, fixed me up, you know, did 10 months of rehab, which sucked. Like it was hard, you know, people bending your knee when it doesn't want to bend, and, you know, trying to learn how to squat again and learn how to walk again. But they were so helpful and, like I said, so quick with getting things done, but done correctly. So I can't thank them enough for that. And, you know, every so often I'd have people checking in from the WWE offices, which was cool to know that they actually cared about their talent. But yeah, it was a weird time being there for just over a week and then hurting myself and being out of the Mae Young Classic, which sucked. But like I said, they were so helpful and, you know, kept my spirits up, and my friends are great too. It was just sucked being there less than 2 weeks and already hurt. So I thought I'd lost my job straight away.
And you've sort of covered your comeback there and how you had all your friends around you in the rehab and whatnot. So moving into the 2018 Mae Young Classic.
Yeah.
So you've had a couple of matches. It was Nicole Matthews you'd beat, and then you were facing Rhea Ripley.
Cara, Nicole, and then Rhea.
So in that match, obviously, is when you've gone for the suicide dive as it started.
Yep.
I just watched that amazing four-part documentary on YouTube the other day. That's incredible. Can you talk to us about that moment? I know it's a sort of a sad subject for yourself, but if you can talk us through that moment and how you felt when it's obviously gone for the second time and you've carried on but then had to stop.
Yeah. So, like, the dive happened and I instantly felt the pops in my knee. So I knew my ACL had gone, and, you know, I was on top of Rhea and I just told her, dude, I've hurt my knee. She's like, the same one? I went, no, the other. She's like, oh God. So I was like, just please, just don't panic. Just listen to me. And, you know, she did. I think she was more nervous than I was at that point because, you know, when it's weird when something terrible happens, where you just get this calm over you. Like, that's what happened. I was just calm. I was like, it's gone. There's nothing I can do now that my ACL's gone. But I know people have wrestled without ACLs. And, you know, they play American football. They play our football without ACL. So I knew I could keep going. But they sent the doctors in. I told them I was fine, but I knew that it'd gone, but I'm okay. And doctor was like, okay, cool. If you're okay, I'll be here if you need me. I was like, okay, cool. Carried on with the match forever. And there's a photo of me taking a drop kick just before I called the match myself, where you see my foot is planted, but my knee is pointing the other way. So it dislocated again because there was nothing holding it together because I'd ended up tearing my ACL, MCL, LCL, both meniscus, one in two places, one in three. I broke part of my tibia. The knee had dislocated twice and some bone contusions. But like that's when the pain kicked in. It was just the tears were more so disappointment knowing that you know, there's now I definitely won't be going to Evolution. I won't be wrestling in front of my hero, Molly Holly. You know, I won't be there with my friends in another historic event. You know, it was just so, so disappointing. And, you know, that recovery was quite hard. I had to have another knee surgery on it because during rehab, the stitches in my meniscus had just popped off because it was just an intense rehab, you know. So they fixed that, cleaned it all up. It took me just under a year to come back with this one because everything had just destroyed and went boom. but again, it's all down to friends, family, and the medic team. I mean, I think it was 2 days after surgery, I had a phone call off Triple H, and my fear was, oh, this is it. I'm being fired. This is it. Like, why would they want someone with two knee injuries at 25? Like, this is the phone call where they're like, okay, you can go back home now. But he literally just rang me to say, just reiterate what he said after the Mae Young where I got hurt, that, you know, they're going to look after me. There's not, like, not to panic. They've got the best care and, you know, they've got plans for me and that my job is secure. So that made me feel good that he was constantly checking in. And every time I was at TVs, he'd make his way over and out of his own way to see if I was okay. So it was nice and reassuring to know that, again, not only the medic, the friends and family support, but I had the officer's support too, which is nice.
And now you've had them 2 knee injuries behind you. You're going up and up among the most popular stars in NXT at the moment. How much was it a relief after that first match back in June 2019? And did it help that your first TV feud coming back was an old friend of yours in Kaylee Ray?
It felt good. I mean, I was nervous because now I was in two knee braces. And my main concern was, how do I do my stuff that I used to do without hurting people? Because the knee brace, they're a hefty piece of machinery, you know, like they're thick, they're quite heavy. So if I hit someone, then it'll hurt them. So, you know, I had to change a lot of my moveset. I couldn't be the same person I was 3 years ago, doing all the high flying stuff. I was nervous, but, you know, I had good, cool people in the ring with, and I was friends with them. But having my first TV match against Kaylee Ray was probably the best person I could have asked for, because we know each other so well and, you know, we're such good friends and we talk all the time. And, you know, it was just comforting. It helped with my confidence knowing that I was safe, she was safe, we trusted each other. And it was just like a cherry on top where we've done all over the UK and Europe together and Japan, to now finally like culminate that in an NXT ring on TV against each other was perfect. I couldn't have asked for a better comeback, to be honest.
Thank you, Crush. Thank you, Tegan. Tegan was fantastic, and it was great to hear her story about her recovery, especially the Triple H part, which I don't think you hear enough about how good Triple H is a leader within NXT and kind of the inspiration that she found from Captain Marvel. If you want to watch the full interview, you can do so on our YouTube, which is Sporf Wrestling, or listen on all good podcasting apps. And let us know on Twitter at GoHomeShowPod who you'd like to see us interview next.
So now we're in the final segment of the podcast, and it is Retro Recap, Chris's favourite bit, because remember, his childhood memories from 50 years ago. And we are going very shortly back in history, back to 2014 this time, for the Payback show, which was, I believe, on the 1st of June 2014. To summarise quickly, we had, I think, 3 or 4 title matches on there. Sheamus beat Cesaro for the US title. Ryback beat Cody and Goldust. Rusev beat Big E. Bad News Barrett beat RVD for the Intercontinental Championship, or to retain, should I say. And Paige retained the Divas Championship, beating Alicia Fox. But the two matches we are going to focus on this week, we have a last man standing match and we have a 6-man elimination tag match. And for those of you who are well aware, you'll know that I'm talking about John Cena beating Bray Wyatt in the last man standing match and The Shield beating The Authority in the last match in their elimination tag. So let's focus on that first one that we mentioned, the Wyatt family.
they had cost Cena title matches at Royal Rumble when he faced Randy Orton, and then also in the Elimination Chamber, which again, Orton was champ for that match. Cena went on to beat Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 30. Wyatt beat Cena in a steel cage match at Extreme Rules. So last man standing at Payback was the trilogy match between the two in their current feud. Cena had the Usos in his corner, Jimmy and Jay. Wyatt had Harper and Rowan. Support on both sides attacked each other early on. Cena goes through a table. Rowan goes through a table. Jimmy Uso goes through two tables. Cena's through the barricade. But then the finish was Cena hitting the attitude adjustment on Bray Wyatt, pushed another crate on top of him to win. And that match went on to be named Match of the Year by Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Then we're on to the main event. One of the biggest main events in Payback history. Obviously, we've got Payback coming up this Sunday on the WWE Network. It's the Shield against the Authority, and it was their last match before breaking up on the Raw after Payback. So, to set the match up, the Shield beat Authority Extreme Rules. The next night, the Authority were like, nope, not having that one bit. Dean Ambrose lost his US title in a 20-man battle royale. The Shield versus the Wyatt family later that night on Raw. Again, Evolution were like, nah, it's not going like that. They interfered and used the Shield triple powerbomb on Reigns to set up that match at Payback. The match itself was a no-holds-barred six-man elimination tag match for all over the arena. It was in the entranceway. It was backstage. Reigns took a triple powerbomb again, this time for a broadcast table. There was lots of antics with the fights in the entranceway, lots of flying around. There was weapons. Batista was eliminated by Rollins. Ambrose eliminated Orton, and Reigns eliminated Triple H to seal the win. This is where it gets interesting. And then we're on Raw. Batista, I think, had quit WWE at this point. Chris, correct me if I'm wrong. But as the famous line goes, there's always a plan B. And we get that crazy breakup of the Shield where Reigns and Ambrose are absolutely destroyed by Seth Rollins with a chair. I think Rollins hit Ambrose with it first, and it's just that shock moment, that Undertaker losing at WrestleMania open eyes moment, and then the beatdown as Seth Rollins joined the Authority and the Shield broke up. Chris, what was your memories of that?
I think it's a really interesting point that we talk about the John Cena-Bray Wyatt match as match of the year, as voted for by PWI, but actually in the grand scheme of the wrestling universe, it paled in comparison to the importance of the match afterwards, the Shield match. Obviously, you talk about what happens the next day, and it essentially, I mean, it set the stage for modern wrestling today in one moment. I mean, you have Roman Reigns as the biggest star on SmackDown, Seth Rollins as the top heel on Raw, and obviously on AEW, you've got Jon Moxley / Dean Ambrose as your champion. So all three of those guys essentially were made stars in this kind of two-day moment that exploded and kind of really set the scene for how wrestling looks and how it's changed in the 6 years since, whatever it is.
I'd have to agree with that. I mean, the impact those three guys have had in the past, you know, 6 years since that moment has been absolutely astronomical. They've completely redefined kind of the idea of homegrown talent within WWE, that you can become absolute mainstream stars from, you know, to use the meme, out of nowhere, you know, because I mean, when I personally started seeing the Shield, I didn't really anticipate they'd have the great run that they would. And I also think that this was the right time for the Shield to end for their first run. I think if they'd gone on any longer, it'd have gotten boring. They're not like the New Day, who the New Day can go on for the next 10, 20, 30 years, and it's fine and it's fresh, because they're not that sort of character. They're anti-authority, you know, in more ways than one. You can't keep that story going, because you just have the same feuds, the same arguments, the same story segments of, are they going to break up? Are they not going to break up? So for me, it just goes to show that one of the few times in the recent years where WWE made the perfect decision, and also surprising us. Everyone was thinking it was going to be Dean who was going to turn heel because of his run as Moxley on the indies. And the fact that it ended up being Seth, who is just the most punchable, snarling knobhead as a heel, going from being the good guy, I think is absolutely fantastic. And this match was an absolute great last showcase of what we loved about the Shield before we moved into the newer era of all three of the respected members.
So I would disagree slightly on the timing thing. However, I mean slightly. I would like to have seen more of Shield as this top babyface faction, if you will. It would have been good to see another 6 months of it. However, I'm a huge proponent of, if you're going to break someone up, it's better to do it too early than too late. Like, the if they had, let's say they'd gone another year and it had got stale and they had run out of storylines for it, the breakup wouldn't have mattered. It would have just been another breakup. Another faction comes and goes and here we are. Whereas actually, by breaking them up early, and you could argue it's early, you can argue it's perfect time, it doesn't really make too much difference. It does, like you said, it sets storylines. I mean, to this day, if you were to put Seth and Roman in a feud, let's say straight after Payback, after Sunday, somehow these two end up in a feud, it wouldn't feel contrived or forced. It'd still feel like there is something here, despite the fact that it'd be the 101st time that these two have feuded since the breakup. It was such a well-done implosion that actually the WWE has something there, probably till the end of time.
Well, that is the end of our show this week, but we have to go to you, our audience. What do you think was the best pop in wrestling history? Was it CM Punk stealing the title at the end of Money in the Bank? Was it the Hardy Boys returning to WWE at WrestleMania? Was it Daniel Bryan overcoming the odds and winning at WrestleMania 30? Or was it the pop heard round the world, Mankind being saved by Stone Cold Steve Austin? Could you have beaten Will in the quiz? And also, do you agree or disagree with Will over that smart fans should be put into room 101? Thank you so much again for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast app to be the first to know when every episode launches. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear what you think of the show. And also, don't forget to check out our full Tegan Knox interview with our very own Crusher on our Sport Wrestling YouTube channel. That's it from us. We'll see you next week. Let's go home.